From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. I appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased to be joined by Julie Sly. Julie, this is indeed the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. We're rejoicing because you're sitting right across the table.
I'm sure you thought of that intro for hours.
Hours. I've been working on it. Julie is the world editor of the...
I like to eat Mitlohi.
Catholic Herald magazine.
I like to eat Mitlohi. I don't like to be renowned.
You aren't working in the press room. Let's say you're not working in it.
Sure, well, it's right across the hall in my office. There is no press room. Well, there is a
I've
press.
I've been a journalist most of my life, and boy, I remember when it first started, the newsroom and the press room were attached, and when those presses, when they cranked up, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, luckily, I never had to be in that era.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was a great era.
My office was always separate from the press
room. From the press. And that's more typical, but... in a lot of newsrooms, I mean, in a lot of even in major papers, the whole operation was there. But the press, where the press ran, because it was so noisy, was pretty well separate.
Yes.
But not where I started. a little bell would ring, warning you.
Oh, really?
And then the presses
when the presses
would start
went
up.
Crank
it was probably
up.
5 feet from the newsroom.
Oh, wow!
I mean, really, really close. And
wow!
I mean, we would give tours to Girl Scouts and, you know, third graders and stuff, and they were just seeing the press and hearing the press and seeing all that newsprint. And
wow,
it was a different era, but miss those times.
What can I say?
Now newsrooms are just, well, they're quiet for two reasons. One, because they're not very full anymore, but also because everybody's working on a very silent computer.
Yes, and I think in the secular newspaper world, there's been a lot of downsizing.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, so you don't have an art and a half
in the newsroom.
Yeah, and I would think most newspapers eventually are just going to have a small newsroom, as a lot of people are working out in the field or they're working from home or whatever.
Tremendous number of people working from home now as well.
Yes.
And not just in newspapers, but
everywhere. No,
it's really changed the nature of workforces. It's changed the nature of business lunches. If you built a lunch place right across from the Bee or the San Francisco Chronicle,
it'd
be very busy. Now you might be out of business because that was kind of your lifeblood.
True.
It's changed a lot of things in our society.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people are getting their news differently.
Different.
I personally do not listen to a lot of podcasts, but those are very, very popular and they reach a lot of people. And people can, just like your show, people can... Right. It goes up on as a podcast, and people can listen to it whenever they want.
They
if they're
can listen
commuting
when they
or,
want. And that's one of the big changes in radio too.
Yes,
is that if it was always live, and if you missed it, you missed it. You know, well, even TV before VCRs and DVRs and now it seems like everything's archived, and you can just pop it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so lots of changes in media.
But you're still in the print industry.
I'm still in the print and web. Yes, web is sort of print.
Have you done any analysis of whether you have more readers online or more readers in the magazine?
It's hard to. I think we have way more. We don't. When we've done surveys, which we have tended to, or Faith Catholic, our publishing company, has done every few years or so, just to like a sampling of readers. Not that many people say they go to the website.
Well, it's interesting
because they have to self-select.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Where if a magazine comes to your home, I suppose you choose to read it, put it aside for later, or recycle it.
I think the big thing about magazines is they are They are a very, very visual medium. I mean, they are made to be beautiful, if you will. And the Herald's no exception, whereas newspapers are much more meat and potatoes kind of thing. I mean, I like newspapers, but they're not pretty. They're not.
Well, you notice even the Me here has gone to kind of like a magazine format with the front. I don't know if
especially
that's every
on Sundays.
On Sundays, I mean, the full page photo. And that I kind of call that a magazine format or a tabloid,
even though they're still up 6 or 7 pages. With a lot of photos.
But. Or the e-edition online, you can click into other stories from their sister newspapers. So, like from the Kansas City Star and the Miami Herald or other newspapers that are owned by that newspaper chain,
which is no longer McClatchy, even though they're calling it McClatchy.
They call it McClatchy.
They like the name, but the McClatchy family is no longer involved.
Right, right.
And that goes back a long time in Sacramento history.
Yes.
Almost to statehood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have to be conscious of that we still do, for the most part, have a middle-aged and older readership. We don't have a lot of for our circulation, we don't have a lot of people under age 35. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are some. But one of the reasons is we're pretty much dependent on people who are registered in parishes. And younger people don't tend to register in a parish. That's just the reality. And the pandemic accelerated everything. I mean, you can see numerous reports from dioceses where they might have been pretty high in their Catholic Mass attendance in 2018 or 19.
Right.
But then you look at the Mass count, you know, the most recent, I don't know what ours was, but that they have to do every October and turn it into the Kennedy directory. Most dioceses are showing that people who said they attended regularly, or at least like maybe 3 out of 4 times a month, that's way down.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the church for sure, but we've seen it, whether it's restaurants or movies or...
Sure.
A lot of them have rebounded pretty well. In fact, it's almost, in some places, overkill. It's like it's or pent up demand. I haven't been able to go to a movie forever. I'm going to go to 6 movies in a row kind of thing, you know, or haven't been able to go out to dinner. We're going to go out to dinner every night. It's almost, but a lot of businesses didn't make it.
Yes.
The church is always going to make it, but businesses can't survive 1 year of no business or even a month.
And I mean, some of our parishes aren't able to have as many open office hours and things like that. So it's a time to kind of be pretty creative on how you're outreaching to people.
Right.
So the one thing we can say about the magazine is that there's about 44,000 households or families where it arrives by mail, and they get an electric shock when they pick it up and they put it in the recycle. No, not really. So, but, you know, I mean, there is a tendency. Like, I got my Santa Clara University Alumni magazine yesterday in the mail, just coincidentally. So I looked at a couple of things, and then I had to go to an appointment, and then I put it aside on my coffee table, and no, I'm going to get back to it at some point.
So, has your name ever appeared in the Santa Clara Alumni Magazine?
Yes.
Other
I used to write.
On the address label.
No, I used to write articles for them. Yeah, when I first moved here to Sacramento.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Comes out, what, 4 times a year or something like that?
I think it's on to 3 times a year. And way, way back, there was a profile on me. Just when I was working at the California Catholic Conference, I wrote numerous articles for them. They kind of changed a little bit the direction of the magazine now. And so anyway, but yeah, it's, you know, I mean, magazines are great. You can take them on vacation with you. You can take them on airplane flights. I mean, you can have a tablet or even an iPhone and read ours anywhere. The iPhone would be a little hard on the eyes, probably. A tablet would be better.
But obviously, magazines don't deal with hard or breaking news very often, and they are meant to be more of a leisure, you know, put it on the coffee table, I'll read that story today, or flip through and look at the pictures. I mean, that's what a magazine is. It's a different medium, for sure.
Yes.
But the Herald, obviously, for years and years and years, and part of your tenure, was black and white ink.
Right.
And newsprint.
Right. Well, when we transitioned almost 12 years ago, I think that even I realized a few years before that, it's just too, with people having so many different media sources and how they, I saw an old TV show rerun the other night and somebody was using a Palm Pilot. Remember those? I never had one of those,
but
it was
one.
Kind of like a handheld.
Right.
It was before you couldn't make a call from it, but you had like this little pencil thing, and you would type in the letters and then your appointment. You come back and plug it into your computer, and it would sync. You know, if I have lunch with Sally this Friday, it would sync into your laptop.
I wonder if we've,
and then that went to BlackBerry. That was a different thing. I don't remember if we could make calls off of BlackBerry or not. I think we could.
You know, they always, you know, all the research you read is whether from infancy on, even in utero, stimulation is good for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you sort of wonder with so many things that are being done for us now that we don't. I mean, even my kids, especially when they were little, you know, they punch into the little computer 4x4, and if it said 280, it was 280. There was no relationship. I have to think this out. 4x4 shouldn't be that high. It was just,
or
like,
you know, somewhere in the person can't, you know, I don't know, even know they teach them how to make change and a hash register anymore.
They don't.
That was the main thing when I weren't learning how to make change.
It pops. It just pops up how much.
Yes.
And then you remember how the people would count it back to you.
Right.
Now
nobody
it's just a lump in your hand. It's like it's frustrating. It's like
no one counts it back to
you.
Yeah.
It's like.
But I do not find that. I mean, I think also too this media has a bit of a numbing effect. I go home at night, and unless it's a really important text or I'm waiting for something from someone, I really don't want to be texting all night something like that. So there is kind of a numbing effect, and I do notice that my retired friends, who are many now, they're kind of, I'm like, oh, did you get that email I sent you? Oh, I really don't check in anymore.
Oh, see, that's
there's a certain freedom in, or I just check in every night at 5. I don't check it during the day, or I don't call me if you want something out. I really don't want to have a long text conversation with you.
Yeah, well,
so I think that's kind of a freedom from being bombarded by all of it.
Yeah, I think, and people have different means of, you know, some people text. Some people say, oh, I never look at my email. They've got their email out there somewhere, and you've sent them 6 emails, and you say, oh, I guess they don't like me anymore, you know, kind of thing. And they, oh, I never check my email, you know, that kind of thing. And then you have people like my mom who just never, she was that generation, they just didn't deal with it. It was like, it wasn't evil.
The unfortunate
evil,
thing
just,
now is so much has moved to online, you can't almost do anything without.
Right.
Yeah. No, doctor's appointments.
I was sent a parking pass for an event the other day, and it's not a physical parking pass.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll send you something you can print, at least, the parking pass. It's a QR code, and you got to get, you know, called the whole family together to help me. Help me. And then you're going to go into the parking garage, Dad. You're going to turn your phone on.
Yeah.
You're going to go to photos, and there's going to be I don't know. Really? Maybe I'll just park on the street.
Yeah. So let me talk about the May-June issue, which people should receive next week.
Let's preface that with Each issue has a theme.
For the most part. Pretty much. Not every story
doesn't mean every story is going to be about that, but it's sort of there'll be a cover and a cover story and in addition to Bishop's Column and et cetera. So
the theme for this issue was faith and farming.
Mm-hmm.
It's expanded to cover ranching also. Farming, I guess, is a type. Ranching is a type of farming. Yeah. Right? Yes, you can do farming and ranching.
Well, it's really funny because I remember my mom's family is all from North Dakota and they would call themselves farmers and mm-hmm. they were raising cattle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and out here in California, we're raising tomato, and they call themselves ranchers. Mm-hmm. And we all thought that was really funny.
Yes.
You know, I think of a ranch as more that would be what you have cattle on.
Yeah.
And a farm would be what you're raising tomatoes on.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes,
just different parts of the country treat it differently.
So since our diocese is so many thousands of square miles, I forget at the moment, but and we include a lot of rural areas, a lot of rural bordering small towns, things like that.
Oh, most of the diocese is rural.
So most of it is, yes. You know. So anyway, I really enjoyed this issue, and we've got some stories about some farm and ranching families and how they incorporate their faith and into their particular lifestyle, which is really a vocation.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look in the scripture and, there are many, it's clearly a vocation and a call. Not everybody.
Right.
In fact, one of the tragedies right now is that young people, even who want to go into farming, can't always go into it, or they have to have off-farm jobs part-time.
Yeah, or they, there's sort of two ends of the farming. One is you're in the ownership. And then there's a lot of really rugged manual labor on the other end.
Yes.
And there's not a whole lot of in-between type jobs like there are in a lot of major corporations.
Yeah, unless they would do our off-farm trucking or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, where they wouldn't,
And, some people lease land. Some people
lease. And the cover story in this is about Stephanie and Dusty Machado,
mm-hmm.
and they have two little girls, and you're going to have to forgive me, I'm not going to have all the details, because I don't have a copy of the magazine in front of me, just the table of contents, but I think their daughters' names were Daphne and Haley, I think, but anyway, they run Machado Dairy mm-hmm. just south of Elk Grove, and Stephanie works full-time for the state. Dusty works on the dairy. His grandfather, I believe, started a dairy, and then his father took over this dairy but had some health issues, and so it came to a point where they had to decide whether to keep the dairy or mm-hmm. not keep the dairy, and Dusty and Stephanie decided they would try and make it go with the dairy.
That's,
so they're very, very busy.
That's,
I mean, they come
off
the
hardest work in farming.
Oh yeah, they come off of their jobs and they have to go right to their ranch mm-hmm. or to their dairy farm jobs.
You always hear when you hear about daylight savings and should we have it? Should we? What about the poor dairy farmers who have to get up at 4 in the morning?
Oh yeah, then they have to roll. They have to have feed for the cows. They try and involve their little girls.
Yeah, and milk and milk products are frequently very volatile in terms of the pricing.
Right.
And they're at
so I would say I think it's a combination. There's some families and some operations where they can make it solely from the farm or the ranch, and then there's many, many others where they have to have off-farm jobs.
And, it's interesting because you always think of dairy and cheese and Wisconsin. And California is
the
leading dairy by far.
At our diocese, we really have almost everything grown.
Just about everything except avocados.
No, we don't have that many avocados. That tends to be not any.
Not any.
We have tons of olives.
And more and more and more
almonds.
Most of our olives used to be like for putting them in a can, you know, to eat.
Yes.
Individual.
More and more is now for oil.
Is oil, and,
yes.
And a lot of that has to do
and
with
And if you
UC
look
Davis.
Out, and you see that they're all perfectly trimmed and in well, a row, and that's so they can be machine harvested.
They grow the trees now, the olive trees, so
they
close
can,
together.
So they
it
can
looks
be
like
machine
a,
harvested.
Looks like
a hedge. Yeah.
And in the old days, they're, you know,
they
if
were all
you go
free
up by,
flowing.
You go up by Corning in that area where a lot of the olives are still just for eating individually.
Yes.
The trees are
they're
way
more,
far apart.
Yes. And they're very, you know, much older, and they have to be shaken for harvesting and separated. And there's only a short window of time
you know,
to do that.
A lot of people don't believe here in California that we harvest tomatoes by machine, which we've done for years and years now.
Yes.
But the olives by machine is much more recent. And,
that's
and
more
I can't,
recent.
I need to go out and watch the harvest. I can't believe you don't destroy the tree.
Oh, I haven't seen it happen. I just know
either.
They're machine harvested.
Oh, indeed they are.
There's
yeah.
quite a few, you know, being a cyclist, I know on these back roads, quite a few you go out. From north of Woodland and go out Road 19, mm-hmm. there's quite a few, along with vineyards.
Quite a few between Davis and Woodland.
That are in the machine harvested
the east,
now? Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and that's where the oil for the chrism mass comes from Yolo County.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So we have to be appreciative of these people who work very, very hard to... So the Machado family, yes, they're, you know, they have to feed the cows, have to do a lot. They are recent. Dusty and his wife, Stephanie, were recently welcomed into the church through the RCIA at St. Joseph Parish in Elk Grove. And I believe their two daughters were baptized there.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah, so they're a very interesting family. That's our cover story. And
how do these stories come to you? How do you find these stories?
I walk the streets.
You walk the streets.
Well, this one, I ask a lot of people for input. Mm-hmm. I ask our...
A little bit like what we do here.
Yes.
Yeah.
I ask our department directors in the pastoral center and staff. If there's something I want from a particular area, I might email out to the pastors in the rural areas or in a particular deanery. So some of them come to me by word of mouth or email. People will email in and say, hey, I know this family or I know this person. And yeah, so various ways. And then I have to talk to them before, because sometimes people feel this would be too much attention on them. Not everybody wants to.
Right.
And we don't usually tell people they're going to be on the cover, because then it seems like extra pressure for them. Not everybody, but, you know, or it ends up, I tell them they might be on the cover, and then it turns out we have a change, then that's sort of disappointing to them. So.
Yeah.
I'll never tell you if you're in it beyond the cover. I don't know how other magazines work. Do they work? Do you tell people what they enter? Well, you don't always know if something's in it beyond the cover.
Oh, no. We don't know where. Well, I mean, I know where my column's going to run.
Yeah.
But because it's a column.
Right.
But in terms of, you know, I still do a little bit of sports writing. And actually, it's getting to be more and more because the staff keeps. Mm-hmm. But. It's not up to me to decide where it gets played or if it gets the football gets headlines over ping pong or vice versa or, you know, and because, you know, with sports, there's so many sports now between high schools and colleges.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And then there's a lot of community sports. And my hometown just had a woman won the Hawaii Ironman. You know,
oh,
well,
wow.
That's not a high school or college or professional
yeah.
or anything. Well, it is professional. But, you know, and wow, that's a big story. This mm-hmm. is from your hometown. You got somebody's got to do a story. And you can kind of presume the sports editor's going to put it prominent.
Yes.
But they don't. They don't. They don't let me near the goods.
So
stay out of the kitchen.
Luckily, we're a small operation. So, yeah. But we have had some times where we thought something was in it, me that have her story, and maybe there was a little glitch or someone, you know, said, oh, I really don't want it be photographed that much. And so, right. You know, you have to be kind of flexible.
Right.
And but I talk to everyone before they're. And I tell them basically what's going to happen with the interview and that I would be sending a photographer. Not all interviews are done in person.
Right.
On the major stories, we try and do them in person. But I will say people live pretty hectic lives. So, you know, unless they're retired, even we have retired people that are really hectic. So
well, you know,
it's hard to... And then we have many miles to drive, and you have to kind of decide whether, you know, it's worth it to drive 200 miles.
The phone has always been a journalist's best friend, especially if something happens and, well, we need a quote from the bishop. We need a quote from the head coach. We need a quote from the principal or whatever it is, something breaking in the news. And all you need is almost a touch base kind of quote.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're doing features, it's a lot harder to get a sense of the person and what they're about just on the phone. I mean, sometimes that's just what's necessary. I mean, especially in this diocese, it goes 300 miles up to the Oregon border. It's a lot harder to say, well, yeah, we're going to.
Well, when I do travel, I try and wrap two or three stories into it.
Sure.
Which makes for kind of a long day. I haven't. Stayed overnight in the beginning. Sometimes I would stay somewhere overnight, or if I happened to be going that way up there for a vacation trip or something, I would try and wrap it in. But, you know, the mileage cost in that is a lot. So, and I also always welcome, we have people in different areas. And at one of our other stories on the Hariri family who live in Glenn County, and they belong to St. Monica Parish in Willows. That story was done by one of our freelancers, Jason Weinrich, who lives in Chico.
The Carrier family.
Uh-huh. I'm calling it Hariri.
It's Carrier because I know the family.
Oh, okay.
But it's spelled right. You spelled it right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, it's pronounced Harrier?
Carrier, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think the patriarch.
I think
there
are four or five generations.
Played football at UC Davis.
Oh, okay.
And, very big in walnuts and almonds.
And they do rice farming.
And rice farming too. Yeah.
And they do stuff. They're very conscious about stewardship and that God is first in protecting creation. And sustainable. Well, I think what I learned, too, in doing some of these and editing is that sustainable is not a novel concept
to these people.
Oh, no. If they don't do things that are sustainable,
they're not
in business.
They're not sustained. I think.
So it's sort of interesting you asked them, and not that they laugh, but.
Yeah, it's just that's how we farm.
That's how we farm. We've always farmed that way.
You know,
why would you go out and pollute your own land or destroy your own land?
Yeah. No, I know that family, and they are really good people.
Oh, okay. The main person who interviewed was Bill. Mm-hmm. I think he might be fourth generation.
Yeah.
The original, in fact, we have a picture. In with the feature story of Albini Harrier on the old corn planter.
Yeah.
Like in the 1880s something.
It goes back generations.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's four or five generations.
Right. And from France, I think.
Oh, is it? I thought they were from Italy.
Oh, maybe Italy.
I think they're from Albini. That's a pretty Italian name, I think.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I think they're from Italy.
Okay.
Yeah. So interview. Bill was the main person that did the interview, but then his mother and his uncle also are involved, and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're very near St. Monica's in
Yes,
in
and Bill is chair at the Finance Council.
Oh, wow.
And he's also done a presentation not too long ago to our deacons about how they expanded their farm operation and also what they do to honor, you know, God and creation through the land and that. So now that story, I actually asked Jason if he knew any family, Catholic families who were farmers up by him.
Right.
And he's also someone that does videos as part of his. He has a media company. So he's a writer. He's a photographer. He does videos. And so he was the one who mentioned the family to me, as well as Deacon Ray McAvoy
Jensen. Yep.
So, you know, that came to me from two different sources. And just coincidentally, Jason had done a video for the Harrier family, which included drone, you know, the overlook of the farm by a drone and all of that. So we have a kind of overhead view of the farm and the magazine, which came from a still photo from the drone video.
It's a big family, and like I've been there for generations. But I with one of the family members, I actually got to ride a rice harvester.
Oh, okay.
And also see their walnut operation where they actually, you know, process the nuts, crack them, and
yeah,
et cetera. You know, and
you see a lot of walnut trees being pulled out.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Well,
I
don't know about this family, but whether it's walnuts or almonds.
I guess out there so many years they pull them out. They have a lifespan, I guess.
In terms of how much production you're getting.
Okay.
Out of them, you know, and plus pistachios are taking over the world.
Yeah, pistachios, you know, or almonds. I don't know. Those trees look similar, don't they? I can't really tell the difference.
Pistachios, though, they clump almost like grapes. It's almost you see a whole bunch of nuts.
Do they have a blossom too, like the almonds?
No, nobody has the blossoms. The walnuts don't have the blossoms. I mean, they all have the blossom, but they don't.
Okay.
They're not pretty
like the
almonds. The almonds are the stars of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have that family featured, and then I had the opportunity and privilege to interview Ryan Mahoney from Emmy Livestock. Mm-hmm. They're a fourth or fifth generation livestock company, and they raise certain breeds of cows. I think they're the Wagyu meat. I'm not sure if that's a breed at cow. And lambs or ewes and sheep. And so I went out to his on a very, very cold March 1st.
It wasn't very long ago.
I can't tell you how cold it was.
You know, I think we went from winter to summer.
We did. We had one spring. One week
day.
Of spring was last week.
It's amazing.
That was March 1st, and my photographer Steve German, was with us.
And where was this?
Well, how you get to it is you go out Highway 113 south, so you would exit off of my Fairfield there.
Like towards Rio Vista?
Yes, towards Rio Vista. Okay. You can get to it two ways. I went a loop, I came back, then through Rio Vista.
Right.
And we had lunch at the bakery in Rio Vista, always a highlight.
Yes.
Across from the Beethorn Bar and Restaurant.
Yes.
Is
that still there?
It's still there, the
Beethorn.
Yeah,
we went in there with our kids.
Steve was too afraid to go in and elk and the deer heads.
Heads
you have
the
to go in. Yeah. He's like, no, just,
well, it's like that
just tell me about it.
Granzella's up in the Williams.
Oh, yeah.
They have a polar bear.
Oh, they have a polar bear?
A real... not live, a real stuffed, whatever, taxiderm.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I haven't been there for a while, but I knew they had that there.
Yeah.
So, but Ryan's really, really interesting, guy. So the Emmy Livestock, you go south on 113, and then you make a few turns And before you get to where Highway 12 comes is, they are on, you turn and they're on a side road, you know, a few miles off 113 called Hughes Haven Road.
How do you spell Emmy?
E-M-I-G-H.
Oh, like,
Richard
like,
Emmy,
like,
his
like
grandfather.
Emmy Hardware. And,
yes,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And Richard, his grandfather, really brought the it goes back, his grandfather actually married into the family, but it goes back a few generations before that. But his grandfather, Richard, was the one who really kind of like modernized the operation more. And I think they do have another more like a feeding farm or feeding lot, but closer to Dixon. I didn't go there.
Yeah.
But they move when the cattle and the sheep get a little older, they move them over there. They're different kinds of feeds.
Right.
I wish I was a better agricultural person. But
you learn a lot on your job.
I learned
you?
A lot.
Yeah.
Well, so those are more grass-fed, you know. Although when we were there to get photos, we wanted him to bring the sheep closer. So he brought out these meat square things of hay. So when you see the picture of him with the windmills in the background and Mount Diablo, we were there on a really cold, windy day, so it was really clear. So you can see Mount Diablo, you can see the windmills outside of Rio Vista, and then he's there with the sheep, who didn't all run up to him, but once he brought hay, they all ran up to him.
It's interesting.
And the baby cows and stuff. It was cool. Yeah, but it was a freezing day.
Well, Rio Vista is, you know, usually it's that south breeze. I'm guessing when you were, it was that north wind.
It was, as we were there at 8 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah,
and
that's
we
from
had
the north.
And then we went into town. They actually are, his company bought the former, I think, Bank of Rio Vista on the streets, and they've turned that in. And they're in various different enterprises. I don't know all of them. So Ryan is about, I think, 38, 39. His wife, Helly, and they have three children. They live in Rio Vista, and they're members of St. Joseph Parish, where he grew up. And
one of the many St. Joseph Parishes.
Yeah, one of the many we have. And
12,
his wife teaches freshman English at the high school.
Oh, wow.
And they met at St. Mary's College. So he has an interesting story. He grew up in Rio Vista, his family, and he said he would do, they have a smaller farm that's off another road. I think it's actually Emmy Road out in the hills, Rio Vista. And he grew up there, but then this larger property where I went on Hughes Haven Road, I think that's thousands of acres. It's pretty big. And so he said he did do some work there when he was growing up on the weekends, things like that. And then when it got to his teenage years, he kind of didn't really, he wanted to work in town at the soda fountain or whatever. Then he went off on a football scholarship to Lewis and Clark.
Oh, in Portland.
And he played, but he also got really interested in some religion classes there. Can't remember the name of the professor, but it's in the article.
Not a Catholic school.
No.
But it does have a religious base.
Yes. Yeah. And then he decided to transfer to St. Mary's in Moraga and was going to play football, I guess, with them. But he also wanted to go on the Rome program and study. So I guess
abroad.
Study abroad, I think, for a semester. So, and St. Mary's at the time also was evaluating whether they were going to keep their college football program.
They eventually dropped it.
Yeah, and because he had to redshirt, he had to sit out a year.
Right.
But, or because he transferred.
Because he transferred.
Yeah. And so
that rule's gone now.
I know. I don't know all this stuff about the college portal and all, whatever and that. But I know when he was going to school, you had to redshirt the year if you transferred.
Right.
So that's when he took the opportunity. It was actually through St. Mary's and Loyola of Chicago. So he studied in Rome, really fell in love with, you know, all things Catholic, which that happens.
Was he not Catholic at the time?
No, no, he was raised Catholic, but the experience of being in Rome.
Sure,
and that.
Sure. Wow.
Then he met St. Mary's and canceled the program. Mm-hmm. So he met with the counselor at St. Mary's and he said, well, you got a lot of religious studies credits here. Why don't you be a religious studies major? And he said, okay. You know, not thinking, mm-hmm. wow, what kind of job offers am I going to get from that? And he met his wife, Ellie, there. And she's from Atwater, I think, down in the Central mm-hmm. Valley. And anyway, he finished right about then between his sophomore and junior years. His grandfather and his mother came to him and said, we'd like you to think about taking over the business. Mm-hmm. And he said, I really hadn't considered it before, but they asked me to consider it seriously. And, you know, he had learned from his grandfather. And so that he said, since I didn't have a lot of other job offers on the table, mm-hmm. and also he said, I started looking at things differently. This is my family mm-hmm. history and heritage. It go to somebody else. This is really our land. And he talked about, you know, it really had a spiritual meaning mm-hmm. to him once he thought about it. And so then later on, he got more serious with his wife. And I think she came out there and, you know, because not everybody wants to be a ranching wife.
Right.
Although they live in town, so they don't live on the
right.
on the beet ranch. But so anyway, I'll let people read the rest of the story.
That's
I detailed a lot there. But he's a very, very, he also is one of our, I won't call him a deacon candidate yet. He's an aspirant, which means they're discerning. Mm-hmm. So they're more like in the second year
right.
of study for the diaconate. And he was very, very frank and said that, you know, it's a lot for a family to commit to. I'm not thinking too far ahead. I have to juggle a lot of things with my family. He said, it's not as if I'm just sitting here on the porch looking out at the sheep every day. And, you know, he took many, many calls, actually. I wasn't always in the truck with them because he drove Steve out to some further dirt roads than I wasn't taking my CRV on to. And so they had, you know, he's taking a lot of calls in the truck, and it looked pretty hectic. That he was really gracious to give us about an hour of his time more than an hour, maybe an hour for the interview, but the rest of the driving around the ranch. And we do have a kind of cool photo of him there. They have about 20 employees. A lot of people have been with them for a long time, you know. And the one family that lives in the house, which is on the Goose Haven Road mm-hmm. property, I said, is that your house? And he said, oh, no, we have, I can't remember the worker's name, but he's been with us almost 30 years and raised his kids here. And also he said every herder, whatever, has a dog that belongs to them because they have the bond mm-hmm. with the dog. So the family takes the dog. Some of the other families that work with them are in other housing, but we had a picture of him, and there's a sign that says Goose Heaven.
Oh well,
I said, we're talking about the weird weather this year, normal weather, I guess. And I said, you seem like you have a lot more ease. He said, oh yeah, the ease of, you know, all different patterns. I think we've seen that this year. I've seen ease and things like that in places I've never seen them before, right. and a lot more. And so I thought maybe they had painted it. They had put it as kind of a play on words. Mm-hmm. Goose Heaven, we're on Goose Haven Road,
right.
but it's heaven for the east here. So I ended up using that picture in the magazine, and I texted him and said, oh, hey, now did you purposely paint it that way as it's heaven for the east? And then he called me back and he laughed. He said, no, we had a painter who painted everything about several years ago, and I didn't supervise it very well. And he thought he was painting Goose Haven, but he really painted Goose Heaven, and we just left it that way.
God has his ways.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's great.
So we have a picture in the magazine of Ryan. It was a very, Steve really had a good time, as you know, normally he's not out on ranches taking pictures for us.
I understand that it was freezing because it was March, but boy, with the amount of rain we've had, And those hills.
Oh, it was so green.
Yeah.
And they really is. I kind of wish I wasn't there on such a windy day, as all I think about was I want to be in the car.
Yeah.
because it really was. Luckily, I brought my gloves and two jackets and all that, as I kind of thought. But if you were there on a non-windy day, yeah, it's really pretty.
Beautiful.
Especially with Mount Diablo in the background. Yeah. It's very picturesque.
Can't we rename that mountain?
What's wrong with Diablo? Does it mean something I don't know?
What it means.
What does it mean? Dirt?
Devil.
Oh, devil. That shows how my Spanish is. Mount Dirt. I just rode up it last Sunday.
You can go to the top.
I've ridden it twice this year. I didn't know all the way summit.
You rode up it.
Yeah, the first time I rode on my road bike just to the short ranger station, mm-hmm. The summit's 4 more miles. But it's like 9 miles of climbing.
I think on my road bike I did it. At about 3,500 feet?
37 something, yes. And then I took 6 hours last Sunday. I took my e-bike this time because I rode around the Sutter Buttes on Saturday, which is not a lot of climbing, but
you
2 days
really
in
go
a row.
Up the Buttes,
no,
you?
You just go around it on Pass Road. Yeah. And so, I took my e-bike. So I didn't own the very tippy top, as the tippy top is like 18%. Even the owls I took had to walk that part. Kind of almost in a fall over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a road or just a path?
Oh, no, it's a road.
You're
you
on
know
the road
it. Oh, yeah,
people
yeah.
People can drive up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they've made some nice turnouts now for bikes. So you just want to own the ranger station from North 8th Road. That's about 8 or 9 miles, pretty much climbing the whole time. Then with my e-bike, I went like 2/3 to the summit. It's pretty high. I felt pretty confident on my e-bike also and had 38-inch tires where my other road bike only has 25-inch tires.
It rises out of nowhere, too. It's kind of
yeah, it's cool.
It's
a lot of people
the
up there.
Coast
beautiful
Ranger, the
wild,
Sierra. It's just,
beautiful wildflowers
yeah.
this
well,
year
they say
everywhere.
Super bloom is just everywhere.
Yeah. So
especially California poppies.
Yeah.
Just
oh, yeah.
Just,
beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. So that's our issue. Bishop Soto has a very interesting column about the use of water in our state and the spiritual meaning of water. And so I hope people read that.
You know, that's it's interesting because I keep seeing somebody named Steve Mount quoted in various newspapers. He's a water guy.
Oh,
you know,
uh-huh.
Like watershed kind of guy, you know, and he made a comment. It wasn't the theme of the story, but he made a comment that because we know about the snowpack and we know about the potential flooding and all this, that these things always impact the poor more than they impact other people, you know. And it's just true.
Well, look at the town of Pajaro.
One of my daughters attends UC Santa Cruz and is part of a group that goes to Soledad Prison. And she called me after they went through Pajaro on the way to Soledad.
Yeah.
And she said, you just wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And not only were their homes probably uninsured, destroyed and they lost everything. They lost their jobs because the strawberry fields were just flooded.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a 1-2 punch.
Well, and now we've got the threat from the Merced River and where Tulare Lake was, which wasn't a lake, but now it's becoming a lake again.
It was. I remember reading about it a couple of years ago when one of my kids had to go down there for an FFA convention And I said, Tulare, you know, it's a farm town, you know, it's a farm area.
Yeah.
And I'm reading about Tulare Lake, and I'm going, whoa. They said it's the biggest freshwater lake west of it. It was bigger than Lake Tahoe.
Yes.
Probably not as deep, but bigger. Unbelievable. And now it's filling back up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And wait till that snow melts.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So the other thing I wanted to mention is we do have in this story, in this issue, a couple other things. The opening of Calvary Funeral Center in Citrus Heights. Mm-hmm. Bishop Soto had a great mass there with
a
few hundred people in the chapel there. And it's like St. Mary's Funeral Center where kind of state of the art, and people are there to help you during a, you know, having a difficult time in people's lives. And so we have that story in there. Also a shorter story about parishioners at St. Thomas More Parish, which, as people remember, was greatly impacted by fire for 5 years ago, but the church is still there. And so one of the programs they have going with some grant money is they have a team of parishioners who give out crepe myrtle trees to new and returning residents when their house is rebuilt.
Those are beautiful trees when they...
Yes. Yeah. So we have that all there. So I don't know when we'll do a faith and farming issue again, but I certainly had other families that... But this is a representation, I think, of what's going on in our diocese. We didn't cover anybody who had a winery or anything, but there's still time in the future.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you think about it, you know, you're talking about sheep and dairy and all of that, and the Carrier family with rice and nuts, and there's still about 400 other crops, you know,
that we didn't do. We didn't do any tomato.
Didn't do any tomatoes. Well, tomatoes, they're not on the outs. We still have a lot of tomatoes, but not like they used to be. We used to raise the number one cash crop in Yolo County for years and years and years and years was sugar beets.
Oh, right.
And now, there's not even any place to process them anymore. No, nobody raises sugar beets.
Oh, nobody anymore?
No sugar beets at all. I mean, maybe in Montana.
Were they processed at that old sugar mill in Hartsburg?
Clarksburg. And also Spreckles had a processing between Davis and Woodward.
Did they make those into sugar then? Like powdered sugar?
Just regular sugar. Okay. I mean, it was a sweetener, but CNH, you know, the brand, was California and Hawaii. It stood for California and Hawaii. Uh-huh. And California wasn't raising sugar cane.
They were raising sugar beets.
And Hawaii was raising the cane.
Okay.
And I guess, I don't know if they mix them, but they make all kinds of sugar, liquid sugar.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
But no more. In fact, I mean, the Yolo County Fair, they had the sugar beet queen contest.
Oh, really?
Every
wow!
Year, you know.
Okay.
And they are.
And we didn't do anybody who was a pear farmer. Aren't there a lot of pears down there at Hood and Cortland and
And Clarksburg?
Not as many though. A lot of have been averted over to vines.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Vines and almonds have taken over a lot of the southern part of the diocese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good, Julie.
Okay.
Greatly appreciate.
Thanks a lot.
Your work.
We were doing California Ranch Land
or
Catholic Farming and Ranch Magazine.
Yeah.
But it's fun. Not that, you know, every magazine has a little different theme and flavor to it.
Yeah. Well, greatly appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks
for
all you do. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. We'll talk with you again soon. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, its valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I question my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. So hold. Well, I've questioned significance, meaning, and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter at all? Well, I question my friendships, alliance, dependence. Who will still be here when I fall? But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. Yeah, the one thing I one thing I don't question.